Me.
I'm actually that I'm
an army.
The attack.
I surrender.
Dave
Stevens,
Shane.
Oh, yeah.
This is Ian and John.
G'day.
How are you?
G'day.
Did I get you serious? Well, basically anything at this stage of the game.
I haven't been to the
game. Where do you want to sit? There or on the couch?
Where there, it's most convenient for you guys.
John?
You better settle that stuff up.
That's okay. Just
do it. Well, let's do it then.
You need a PowerPoint? Sorry, no, I don't.
No, okay, so you're set. Isn't this amazing?
this is our talking point to break the ice.
I don't think you need to do that with David.
Help the ice.
Great. Okay, it all started as a play. Did you ever expect it to end up as a film?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, one of my joys about the play when I'd written it was I said to people, this play cannot be adapted to the cinema. It is a theatrical experience and that's its home. It'll never be done anywhere else. So when they came to me and said, we want you to write a film of it, Davey, I said, don't get me, get somebody else. And they said, why? I said, because I'm wedded to the play. They said, no, we want you to do it. So I then had to approach it as a movie, and I had to cut some of the most beautiful things that the playwright had written. And he still doesn't speak to me. But there you go. They paid me.
Sort of answers my next question, but I will ask you anyway. I haven't seen the play, but was the transition from stage to screen an easy one, and have the filmmakers kept true to the original story?
First of all, the transition was very hard because there is a device. Have you seen the movie?
Yes.
There is a device in the movie of the characters talking to the camera, which a number of people said, well, it's a hangover from the stage play, and it should have been ditched. In fact, it's not a hangover from the stage play, although it happens in the play. But my training as a writer is in television and cinema. And when I approached this, I tried to approach it with a completely open mind and say, okay, you're writing a film based on this material. How do you approach it as a film? And the talking to the camera caused me a very great deal of heartache because I knew there would be some resistance to it. And there was a great deal of resistance to it initially from the director and then from the producers. But it's a valid cinematic device. It's been used virtually since sound came to film. It's usually been a very successful device. I mean, you think of films like Edward, My Son, 40 years and 50 years ago that used it. You think of Alfie, 25 years ago that used it. You think of any Woody Allen picture.
And more recently, Orlando.
Orlando, they use it. It is a valid cinematic device. And what you're faced with is by the end of the film, there is no one else that the dad character, the Jack Thompson character, can say these things to. It's also a craft device. The film is... I got attacked by some of the more militant gay groups in New York because they said, well, it's, you know, it should be more gay. My point about the piece is that it wasn't designed for people who know. I had no interest in preaching to the converted. I wanted to reach a much wider audience whom I thought had some interest or questions about the gay lifestyle. And I wanted to say to them, it's all right, come with me, I'm your friend. I will take you by the hand and I will show you things you've never seen before, but I'm your friend. The reason that the dad character is the central talker to the audience is because there will be a resistance, whatever the gay community thinks, there will be a resistance to some of these things by the larger audience.
And does the average straight want to be taken by the hand?
I believe so. I believe that many of them do. Not all of them. I think that many of the straights in Tasmania who friend the dreadful laws don't want to be taken by the hand, but I don't think they represent the majority. I know a number of people. I've been in situations here and in New Zealand where working class women who have never encountered a living, breathing, talking, walking poofter before have literally dragged me into the kitchen, sat me down, and plied me with questions about it. Many of them questions that you would dismiss as stupid, which for them were real hang-up questions. Questions as silly as, if I put my baby boy in pink, will he turn out to be a poofter? But they don't know these things because they don't have the education. They're encouraged to believe from the word go that it's all death and disaster, and nobody ever answers those questions. And one of the things I wanted to do was to be able to, if I could, answer some of those questions. Now, if the film doesn't reach people, it will be because those people don't want to be reached, I think. But for the people that do want to be reached, and the responses that we're having, I mean, in America, I didn't know about the responses there, I haven't seen any of the screenings there, the responses have been quite remarkable, from essentially straight audiences.
Okay,
let's see what we can do.
It's really more time for me.
Are you pleased with the results, and especially about the casting of Jack Thompson and Russell Crowe?
Oh, enormously. enormously. This is the first time, and it's had 60 productions in the United, in North America, not just the United States. But this is the first time I have seen Australian actors play it. It was written for Australian actors, and even though whenever it's done in America, it's set in Australia, they're all battling the accent, which they attribute with the greater or lesser degrees of success. And this is the first time I've seen Australian actors do it. And to have one of the great icons of the Australian cinema do it, and one of the, I suspect, upcoming icons of the Australia do it, is enormously pleasing to me, because I'm hearing it spoken with all its natural rhythms and its natural attitudes, as opposed to transplanted rhythms and attitudes. And I think it is a triumph for Jeff. I think Russell is terrific in it. I've seen many Jeffs, and Russell is up there with the very best of them, if not better than the best of them. But Jack is far and away the best dad that I have seen.
You're quoted as saying that Some of Us is a tribute to the aggressive tolerance found in Australia. Can you explain to me about that?
Before I came to Australia, a lot of people said to me, David, don't go there. They don't like Poms and they hate Poofters. And it is certainly true that during my time here I encountered some intolerances. But for the most part, I encountered amongst the working class Australians that I worked with a sense of relief that someone was being open about their sexuality. To the point that many of these film crews became very close friends of mine. And not people, not intimates, not people you would see every day. But 2 weeks ago I had occasion to go to a film set in New Guinea, Robinson Crusoe, which has a partly Australian crew. And I walked on the set and there were half a dozen of the guys that I used to work with, many of them when they first ever worked on a movie set. And it was just like old home week. I mean, they greeted me with open arms. One at least had tears in his eyes. And the first scene I wrote turned out to be a masturbation scene. And the whole attitude was sailor's back, you know, because sailor is my nickname to them. So among people like that, I found an extraordinary tolerance and a willingness to change their views about the world. And I think this has been true of much of Australian society, however difficult life may be here in terms of multisexualism, multiculturalism, multiracialism. The change here and the change in the time that I've been here has been quite remarkable and has been achieved with less pain. I'm not saying without pain, but with less pain than it has been achieved or is being achieved in some other societies. If you look at what is happening in Germany, which is only now turning into accepting it as a multicultural society, or Italy, which has decided to go the fascist way, if you look at what is happening there, then what has happened in Australia has been achieved with considerably less pain than almost anywhere else. That is not to deny that there has been pain and will continue to be pain, but it is a matter of degree.
The phrase hub denotes a heterosexual understanding slash unafraid of gays and other queers. The Jack Thompson character's level of acceptance came across as almost too much of a good thing. Was he a hug from hell, or is there a sting in the tail of aggressive tolerance?
Well, I guess it depends on your agenda. I didn't invent this character out of my mind. I mean, I'm not that clever. The first incident was a direct personal experience. When I was a young man, I had occasion to spend the night in bed with, I was about 17 at the time, with a young cockney boy from the East End. Fast asleep in his arms in the morning, his mother came in, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Do you take sugar in your tea?" Which was a bit of a shock to me, because I came from a very right-wing family. My father was closer to Genghis Khan than to Harry, and my father never accepted my sexuality. But then when I came to Australia, I had a number of close friends. My friend John Barney, who died of AIDS, his father and mother were absolutely accepting of John's sexuality. His boyfriends were welcomed into the house. They shared the same bed, and mother bought them tea in the morning, and dad would sit down and discuss the meaning of life with them. So speak as you find. I don't claim that everybody is like this. But drama is in the particular for me. There are people like this. We have found that there have been a number of parents of people who suspect their children of being gay who are going to see the film to try and understand what it's like. We have found a number of occasions, especially with the play, of young gay men bringing their parents to see the play, either to come out to them or to explain what their lifestyle is like. And it happened to us in the first week, in the first production in Los Angeles. A young man came to see the play three times, a very handsome young man. Not that handsome has anything to do with anything. But a very sort of American, straight-looking guy is what I mean by that, who came to me and said, "Look, my parents can't handle it. If I fly them out from Chicago to see the play, will you meet them? Will you talk to them afterwards?" And we said, "Sure, of course." They came, they saw the play. Afterwards, he brought his mother and father over. His mother, a little dumpy Middle West woman, was in tears, and she hugged the producer, who was a woman. The father came to me and shook my hand and said, "I'm going to say thank you to you, but mostly what I want to do now is talk to my son." And he put his arm around his son's shoulder and walked away to talk to him. It was very moving. Now, if it only achieves that, then I think that's a lot. But the point that I keep coming back to, because it's got a little heavy today, is that it is a comedy. It is also probably the first comedy in which an audience is actively hoping that the boy will get the boy. But it is a comedy. It is designed to show to an audience it's okay. If this film does not succeed commercially, it will be more difficult next time to have a film in which the boy gets the boy. That was my major raison d'etre for writing it. I wanted to write something in which it is, that becomes the desire of the audience, to want the boy to get the boy. Not just to accept it, but to actively want it to happen.
Sorry, I'm going from there. I found the film incredibly funny, but I had a lot of people ask me after the preview that the film was great, but what's a straight audience going to laugh at? And I wonder if you can answer that. Do you think that's true?
I haven't seen a viewing, a showing in Australia with a straight audience, so I can't tell you. I mean, I've seen the showings in America, and I can tell you what they laugh at there, and they laugh at all the things that, most of the things that a gay audience laughs at too. The humour in it is, I mean, it's pretty bawdy, and it's pretty basic. Up your bum is not a difficult line to get laughs on. The situation is what makes it particularly funny in those circumstances. And I've just done a phone interview with a very straight guy in Cairns who took six of his Arkham mates to see it, and he said they just thought it was the funniest film they'd ever seen. Now, I can't tell you specifically what they laughed at, but I guess they laughed at the dirty bits, which is what people usually laugh at, you know. I would imagine there was some catcalling during the kissing scene, which is a very confrontational scene for a straight audience. And I have to tell you, when I first saw it, I found it slightly disturbing, because I knew both the actors were straight, but I believed them so intensely, I thought, if something doesn't happen soon, these guys are going to get off. They're not just going to suck face, you know, they're going to suck more than that. And so when Dad came in, it was a huge relief. And that seems to be the reaction of the audience. As George just quoted one of the lines to me, like, I wouldn't mind seeing you in your speedos, which she said she laughs at, out of recognition. Another line that has been quoted to me several times today is when young Greg says, you know, well, I meet blokes all the time, but they're all only after one thing, and it's not everything in life, is it? People, I mean, that's not an accidental line. That was done deliberately. That is a line that I've heard young girls use. I've heard young men use. A dear friend of mine, Robbie Wilkes, who also died of AIDS, was a gorgeous, bright-eyed, bushy creature. And how open can we be on this program?
Very.
I mean, he said, I just get bored with being used as their fuckbag. They say thank you afterwards, and then you never see them again. And that line was written for people like Robbie. Or I lost your question. I'm sorry.
No, that was fine.
Well, if the only difference between straight and queer is six beers, what's the difference between straight acting queer and queer acting straight?
Well, first of all, you said that, not me. I don't necessarily think that's the only difference. Second of all, I don't know what the difference is. I've never found it. I have lived my life, most of my life, openly homosexual. I am sure I have found intolerance in my life. I have only on two or three occasions recognized it. The only time I've been beaten up was not because I was a poofter, but because I had money in my pocket. Maybe I don't mix in the right circles. I was warned about Hollywood as I was warned about Australia. People said to me, David, you know, when you get there, you'll have to behave yourself because it's a very homophobic town. I have maintained being me, and I'm in constant employment there at a very high level. I have found that people respond to me and to my lover absolutely openly. Some of the straightest producers in town come and stay at our house. I've found what the audience in Parramatta seems to have found is, first of all, it's about time, and second of all, what a relief. So I don't know what the difference is, but I don't think six bottles of beer is the only difference between being gay and straight. But I don't know that the differences finally matter. They may only matter to you if you need a crutch for your life. I had a gay person say to me the other day, well, you know, I don't get employed because I'm gay. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that it wasn't because he was gay. It was because he had a desperately unpleasant personality and was always telling the producers off. So I don't know how you handle that. I don't know what the answer is. I can only speak as I find.
I understand your own father was definitely not like Harry Mitchell. Can you tell us a bit about your early life as far as love and family were concerned? And as a second part to that question, is The Sum of Us the way you wish it had been?
Well, it's such a big question, you see, because my mother had to go on an extraordinary journey. My mother lived with the fact that her mother was a lesbian who lived with another woman, and my mother felt excluded from my grandmother's love. So my mother was not tolerant about that relationship. My father was very right-wing, old-fashioned British. He had been in barracks with Lawrence of Arabia and couldn't stand the man because he suspected him of being a pufta. I mean, my father says that his skin crawled at the idea of it. He was from his time. And I'm sure it was true. My father knew, and my father simply couldn't handle it on any terms and didn't want to discuss it. He, in an attempt to try and come to terms with it, he went to see my father in the clinic. And he said to me, I'm sorry, I just can't handle it. I suppose I'm racist, I suppose I'm sexist, whatever you want to call me. Yes, I am, but I am 77 years old, and I can't handle it. And he cut out that way, that was his out. My mother, on the other hand, has gone this extraordinary journey with a dyke grandmother and a pufta son. She is now completely embracing of my friend Lauren. I mean, he is part of the family. He calls her mum, and she adores him. My early growing up was difficult because I was the only boy. My father had enormous expectations of me, but I grew up under very bizarre circumstances. I was born in Palestine. I was brought up in Africa and the Middle East, where usually I was the only white child. Consequently, I was a minority of one. I had to cope with all that. It is certainly so true to say that all my early experiences, sexual experiences, were with the Arab boys from my school. I had a lover at the time I was 13 until the time I left Jordan when I was 15. I knew it was something that Morton didn't talk about, but we got on and we were lovers in the true sense of the word, if we understood the word. And then when I went to England, I found out this wasn't the way that most people behaved and the thing that most people did. So my own growing up is so bizarre, I don't think it can be a role model or an example for anybody, or really has much value for anybody else, because I don't think anybody else very much grows under those circumstances now. Was, because of my growing up, was I set into a pattern of behavior that I became a retarded adolescent and never sought to change? No. I remember at 5 years old, whether it was simply out of a sense of curiosity or because of where I then knew I was going, making a sexual suggestion to my 17-year-old cousin. I wanted to see what he looked like with his bathing costume on. And I have, like Jeff, done it with girls, not just to make sure I wasn't missing out on anything, because in the particular case I'm thinking of, I found the woman a very loving woman. And it happened quite naturally, and I didn't find the experience repellent, or I found the experience very enjoyable. But I get sexually turned on by blokes, and not just sexually turned on, because I don't have the highest sex drive in the world. I find in my lover's arms a comfort. I find in his attitudes a way of thinking that makes me feel like a complete person. And I have not had a relationship with a woman that makes me feel that way, nor am I looking for a relationship that makes me feel that way. Do I wish it had been different? I don't think so. Do I believe it can be changed? No, absolutely not. I would like to have had a son at some stage, but I wouldn't have wanted to inflict pain and misery on another human being in order to satisfy a selfish want of my own. That seems a much longer answer to a much shorter question that you asked me that you intended.
Do you think that films like The Wedding Banquet and like Four Weddings and a Funeral, where you do have prominent gay heroes, in Four Weddings and a Funeral, the gay characters were just characters who didn't get special attention, just as the deaf person didn't get special attention, but they were real.
Yes, I think that's a very important part of the process. I mean, Wedding Banquet, I think, is probably a more important film than it appears to be. But still, it only reached a very select audience. What worried me about Four Weddings and a Funeral and a number of films like that is that the gay characters become token gays. I don't think they were just token gays in Four Weddings, but they're there. We know they're there. We get a laugh out of the fact that they're there, and then we move on. What seems to me, what had to happen was that somebody had to make a film, and, you know, fingers crossed, it might be this one if the audience responds to it, where, as I say, one of the imperatives of the film, one of the audience wants of the movie, is that the boy should get the boy. Because when that happens, the day that that happens with one film, then it's going to make it so much easier for the films that come after. I work in Hollywood. I know how Hollywood functions. I was told by a Hollywood agent, very important man at the biggest agency. Forget it, Davey, this movie is never going to happen. Not because everybody's so homophobic, but simply because these films do not make money. I think we have to hope and pray that this film will make money because it'll prove him wrong. And if it proves him wrong, it may prove somebody else wrong. And it'll make it just that little bit easier for the next person that wants to do a film in which the boy gets the boy.
If the relationship between the grandmother and her woman lover... Well, no. The relationship between the grandmother and her woman lover is the most successful. It's certainly the longest in the film. Do you care to offer an opinion on Mary and her partner having to separate? Or would you like to comment on the whole issue of older queers? Or even nursing homes unable to cope with any sexual or loving relationship whatsoever?
Well, I think my comment, my response to that is pretty obvious. I mean, that aspect of the story is directly autobiographical, as I've already said, and the separation of Gran and Nellie was the real name, was a major thing in my mother's mind. It has been justified to me by all of my mother's family as being a thing that had to be done because the two women couldn't look after each other. It has been justified to me by my sisters as being that anyway the relationship was over. It has been justified as towards the end they were desperately unhappy, they didn't want to be together, but that is a justification. The major response was my mother. I mean, it was her mother we were talking about, and she said, it made me think that I've always thought, you know, it was right to split them up, and now perhaps I begin to wonder if it was very, very, very wrong. It's not an issue that's very seldom addressed. My lover is some years younger than myself, and when we agreed to go into a relationship, I said the thing that terrifies me is that I'm probably, given the natural course of events, going to die before you, and I can't bear to think of what will happen to you when I'm gone. And it is still a good issue to me. I mean, we've been together for 7 years, we have four dogs, we're our family, we wander the world looking for a country that will take us. And I'm worried shitless as to what will happen to Lauren when I go. I mean, it's one of the reasons I think why I'm still here is because I can't bear to think of him being alone without me. I think it's something that not just the gay community, but the whole community must address. And I mean, there is an element of craft in this play, too. And part of the reason for Gran and Mary being there is not just to try and explain my concept of Jeff's sexuality, but also to present this thing as one of the guides to the audience, one of the things that an audience can associate with. And a straight old person in the audience is going to be worried about what happens when they get old. Will anybody still love me? Will anybody still look after me? So I think it's of an enormous importance to the gay community, because what is going to happen to any of us when we get old? But I think it's also a very pressing question to the straight community. So by giving them something, a problem that they can directly relate to, as may personally affect them, even if they don't know gays or don't have gay children or don't want to know, that they can relate to that one. It's one of the devices by which hopefully by the end of the movie, they arrive at that point, as Jack said on television last night, where you want those two boys to get together. And that is my propelling imperative, to provoke that need, that want in the audience. Aging is a wonderful thing, but getting old is a frightening thing if you have not been able to make tremendous preparations for it in terms of what will happen to you. It applies to the guys who have AIDS. I mean, the overwhelming thing becomes then, will anybody love me when I'm dying?
Short, sweet, to end on.
Yes. These questions, most of them that I've been asking, have been passed on to me by various queers in the community. And the same one who asked that question wants to know, is Dad's fate the wrath of God?
Absolutely.
And if so, is it in response to the big speech of acceptance, I'll never be ashamed of him, he has a right to love, or is it more to do with having separated his mother and her lover?
No, absolutely not. It's my response to the AIDS crisis. I wrote the play just after my friend John Bunningham died of AIDS. What was happening in Australia at that time, I can't speak for the rest of the world, I wasn't there, is that it was being seen as, you know, God's plague on gay people and the curse of God and everything. So what I deliberately decided to do was to transpose the whole thing and say, okay, so what if the gay son stays healthy and the gay father gets debilitatingly sick so that he has to be looked after? Because I believe we are all our brother's keeper. And I hope, however subtly, and it may be I've done it too subtly, but I hope, however subtly, that an audience watching that will think, okay, so what happens if the kid gets AIDS? Do I look after him? Will I look after him? Will I be that caring enough about him? That's why it's there. It's not a deus ex machina. It's not a wrath of God. It's trying to find a simple answer to a very, 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 very big question. Does that answer it?
I think so.
I'll go on if you like. I mean, I got the chats now, as you can tell, but I'm also running out of steam a little bit.
Well, any more questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
That's, well, another point I was just going to say before about how Quinn and Chris been in the film that I've seen with John Hurt as the naked civil servant. He was making the point that the one really good thing about being a very obvious homosexual is that people can approach you with confidence and know where you stand.
Oh, absolutely. That's the way I feel too. That's absolutely the way. I make no secret, I make a joke immediately. So that people say, oh, okay, now I understand. But I mean, talking to Quentin Crisp, I have a funny story to tell you. He came to the first night in New York. And he's, I mean, he's really a strange guy now, you know, because all this mauve hair piled up on his head, and he looks like, it's like cobwebs, and he still puts on a pancake and has beautifully lacquered fingernails, which are all chipped. And he smokes much too much, so he has nicotine stains. And he doesn't talk very much. He keeps this sort of barrier between. But, you know, we were nice to him, and he came to the party. And I had a chat with him and then went to talk to somebody else. And I saw him sitting by himself and I looked at Lauren. So Lauren went across and had a chat with him. And eventually Lauren said, I had to ask him the question. You know, I said, what did you think of the play? And Quentin looked at me and said, oh, it frightened me. And Lauren said, why did it frighten you? And Quentin said, oh, everything frightens me. Lauren said, what do you say after that? But he was very sweet. He gave us a lovely review. And he referred to, as he refers to everything, by Mr. Stevens.
Mm. He's the one person I've seen Julian Clary actually be scared of when
Really?
Was chatting to him on the Stratton Island Ferry in this video.
Well, there you see Quentin, who is so frightened of everything, he's able to frighten other people. So how's it going, guys? Queer Radio. Is it good?
I think it's terrific. Successful?
Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you.